How to Get Along with Difficult People by Dr. Albert Ellis was recorded live at the Institute for Rational Emotive Therapy in New York City on March 6, 1991. Dr. Albert Ellis, president and founder of the Institute for Rational Emotive Therapy, has been a psychotherapist in New York City for over 40 years. 1990 marked 35 years since he first developed rational emotive therapy. Rational emotive therapy is the original cognitive behavior therapy, a short-term problem-solving approach to mental health. Dr. Ellis is perhaps the most well-known of modern psychologists, both because of his prolific production of books and articles and his iconoclastic approach to the challenges posed by modern life. The following lecture and demonstrations are based on techniques described in Dr. Ellis's formidable repertoire of writings, including How to Stubbornly Refuse to Make Yourself Miserable About Anything, Yes Anything, and the classic A New Guide to Rational Living.
Difficult people, how to get along with them and not drive yourself crazy. Now first, let me briefly mention, because it would take 2,000 years to get them all down, the different kinds of difficult people that unfortunately you very frequently frequent, or else you wouldn't be here tonight. People who are difficult are very often dogmatic. They have their devout musts, shoulds, and oughts, which we teach people how to get rid of, but we haven't taught them yet, unfortunately. They're rigid, they're angry, they're damning, they blame mainly you, not so much themselves, that would be better. They're critical, often procrastinating, and late for the noble appointments with you, of course. They're defensive, don't face their problems, they're childish, argumentative, often vindictive, stubborn, bizarre, grandiose, needy, boring, repetitive, irresponsible, and I could go on and on and on, but I'll just go on with a few more, and that is, they resist authority, especially yours. They're often depressed. They have abysmal, low frustration tolerance. They are frequently moralistic, withdrawn, passive, some of them, and inert. Some of them are passive-aggressive, which is even worse. And some of the bastards enjoy their symptoms. Such as especially the druggies and the alcoholics and the people who love to be angry. And in terms of disturbances, if we were to give them the usual classification of disturbances, many of them are emotionally disturbed. Not all, they're just disturbed in some areas sometimes, but they may be neurotic or borderline. A few of them are psychotic. Some of them are psychopathic or sociopathic. Some, alas, are mentally deficient, not brilliant as you are, of course. And some of them are senile, organic problems, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, phobic, etc., etc., etc. Now the problem is to look not so much at them. I'm going to get around at the end to tell you hopefully how to change these people. We shall see. But first you better face the fact that when you get upset about them, these difficult individuals, you really have a problem about your upsetness, not your sorrow and your regret and your displeasure and your frustration, because they are often or act in a damned annoying manner. But when you feel really enraged and hostile and have low frustration tolerance and especially, of course, self-hatred about them, then you bring on that reaction. They do not upset you. They try, they do their damnedest, but you unfortunately let them upset you, So the problem right now in this talk is to show you how to stubbornly refuse to upset yourself about them. And then as you are doing that, you go to the other side of what we call systems therapy. You try to change the system in which they exist to help them change themselves. But if you try to change them when you're off the goddamn wall yourself, you're not going to get very far. So the first thing is to work on you. And your disturbance is especially anger, because the most likely disturbed feeling you're prone to bring on would be anger. Now, what we call a activating event or adversity, they act like a pain in the ass in one way or 10 ways or another. And at C, consequence, you feel sorry and disappointed and regretful, which is fine, that's okay, that you're entitled to. But then, unfortunately, you also feel angry, hostile, enraged, furious, homicidal, sometimes suicidal, but mostly homicidal. And that's your problem, because you always have a choice of not feeling that and going back to the sorrow and regret and displeasure. And anger comes largely, not completely, because you have a stimulus and they're again acting in an obnoxious, annoying manner, let's assume they are, and you're telling yourself, one, I don't like what they're doing, which is fine, and then you get sorry and regretful, but then you're also demanding, commanding various things like, they must not be in as difficult as they indubitably are. And because those bastards must not be the way they indubitably are, it's awful, horrible, it's terrible, I can't bear it, they're no damned good, they'll always be that difficult, or more so, and there's nothing I can do about it, nor about me. I have to be upset. Because being a talented screwball, as most of you very easily, without any effort, are, you then take your upsetness, your rage, your anger, your vindictiveness, etc., and you make that into a new activating event or adversity and say, I must not be angry, I must not be angry, I must not be angry. Isn't that awful? And then you get angry at yourself for being angry at them and maybe depressed and horrified. So the main thing is, though, that you insist, command, imperatively, that they must not, ought not do what they are indubitably doing. And of course, as I'm going to say a little later, they must, because that's their goddamn nature to do that. Now, lots of you think that if you feel angry at them, that's good, because you're expressing your honest feeling, and that feeling will, of course, get you disadvantages, but it's yours, and that therefore either you should or must feel it, and maybe even express it. Lots of luck on both of those. Anger, rage, fury, hostility, not displeasure at what they do, but damnation of them for doing it, because that's what anger is. It says, one, I don't like at all what they're doing, which is fine, you don't have to like it, and therefore they shouldn't do it, and they are damnable people for doing it. And as soon as you get angry, even if you get very, very angry just at their act, but especially at them, damning them, it has immense harm, because actually it's a weakness. You don't yet feel strong, but you act like an idiot and do the wrong thing, so it's a weakness. It's almost always useless, very rarely gets them to change. On the contrary, it antagonizes them, so sometimes they deliberately act with more difficultness, but it consumes your time and energy. It's de-energizing because of that. You can't do other things to cope. It brings up usually ineffectual, inefficient solutions. because if you were not angry but just sorry and displeased, you could figure out what to do maybe, but with the anger you almost always do the wrong thing. And it brings on, as we especially know, as you may have read in that great science newspaper, the New York Times recently, all kinds of psychosomatic reactions. I said that years ago in my book, Anger, How to Live With and Without It, which you can still get a copy of. But now we have many more evidences that the heart trouble and the organic ailments and the psychosomatic ailments of the so-called type A personality mainly stem not from overworking, from compulsive working, but from rage, anger, fury, either expressed or unexpressed, both. Now, if you don't express it, maybe you'll blow up internally a little more, so it'll be worse. But even if you express it, it gets you the ulcers and the other psychosomatic things. So you don't have to give up anger, but it would be highly preferable and you at least turned it into anger at what people do and not at them for doing it. Now, what do you do if these people really are difficult, and we're assuming they are, and you're not just paranoid about it? You have evidence that they're a royal pain in the ass in many respects, not completely. So in RET, we have many cognitive, many emotive, many behavioral techniques. So let me just go into some of them about anger. What do? Well, you dispute actively the shoulds, ought, must, demands, command that they must not be the way they are. And you say, prove it, show me, why must they be? Which is a rhetorical question, because the answer always is the same. They have to be the way they are or do what they're doing right now. That's their silly nature. That's their nasty nature. Too bad. That's the way it is. They don't have to do it for all time, but right now they obviously had to do it because they did it. And you dispute the awfulizing. Why is it awful? Prove that I can't stand it. Show me why they are turds for acting turdily, as they must not. And where is it written that they'll always be as painful and as obnoxious as they now are? And if you really do that disputing and think, not just read it in my books, but do it, and the answer is always the same. There's no reason why they must not do what they do. They'll have to be lovely, and it's never awful. It's only damned inconvenient, and I can't stand it, though I'll never like it. And they are fallible, screwed up humans who are behaving badly now, and maybe lots of times, and maybe even into the future, but they're not damnable. They don't deserve to be roasted in hell quite for eternity. Almost, but not quite. So you go over that very, very powerfully and strongly, and I'll give you some emotive techniques of doing it a little later, but you do it first thinking-wise, philosophically. And prove to yourself people, alas, often are difficult, or more accurately, as Alfred Korzybski and his associates would say, act badly much of the time. That is what they do. But then you write down coping statements that you get at E, effective new philosophy, because at D, you dispute, prove it, show me why they must not do what they do, and then you come up with answers. And you write down some of the answers, and you go over them. You write them down, go over them. Coping, rational statement, self-statement, such as, that's the way they are, alas. But, too bad. They are fallible humans rather than rotten, bastardy humans. They have a right to be difficult, even though they're wrong in exerting that right. It's not horrible, awful, or terrible that they're so difficult, tough. It's still only a pain in the ass. And another cognitive technique, we have many of these thinking techniques, is called reframing. In reframing, you see the advantages of the disadvantages of life. You look for them. For example, these difficult customers, DCs, that you're upsetting yourself stupidly about, if you really look at them, very often they're very interesting, fascinating, like the snake, but still fascinating. They're challenging. They give you the advantage of disciplining yourself about them. You can acquire forgiveness of them, not of what they do, because what they do may be really appalling, but you can forgive them for it. And they have various other practical advantages often, especially if they're your boss, or your mate, or your obnoxious children. And sometimes they give you money, or love, or sex, or a few other things. So don't think it's completely disadvantageous. You can find the advantages of almost any obnoxious individuals, or again, actually that's an overgeneralization, humans who often act obnoxiously, because to modify the word individual, say they are a rotten person or even a good person, is an overgeneralization. Then you can use cognitive distraction when you're with them and have to be with them at home or at work or even in sports. Then you can think of other things, focus on the work you do rather than the person, the obnoxious people you're doing it with, and focus on the sport you're doing, focus on anything except the fact that they, A, are doing the bad thing, which they probably are, and then two, that they're no good for doing it. So you focus on all kinds of things, including even pleasurable things. Philosophically, you try to think through and acquire over and over the philosophy of human fallibility, yours and theirs. And you're fallible because you're stupidly upsetting yourself, and I'm fallible. Of tolerance, again, for humans, not necessarily for what they do. You might be quite firm about trying to get them not to do it. Of accept what you can't change there. They and their behavior when you can change it, not like it. And the philosophy, which I have in my book, Executive Leadership, the two magical words which cure most human disturbance, tough shit. That's the way they are. And you go for a philosophy of long-range hedonism, because in the short run, they're giving you pain, problems, hassles, but in the long run, you could accept them. And again, you can reframe what they do and to see their own frames of reference, understand them, that they almost always have serious problems and disturbances. They're under stress very frequently. Again, they are fallible humans. And you can look at your own difficulties, really introspect, to see how similar some of the things they have are similar to yours, and therefore, again, you can understand and accept them. Another cognitive technique, a favorite one of RET, is referencing, where you write down when something bothers you, such as these obnoxious people, all the good points that they have. You really make an effort, and you'll be surprised, some of the most annoying people have very good points, so you write them down and you think about them sometimes beginning 10 or 20 times a day to go off your list. Write down the good times you've had with them and might have in the future despite their annoyingness, and list the disadvantages, such as I gave you briefly before, of your remaining hostile, vindictive, angry at them. Really write them down and go over and over until you think them in and give yourself an incentive to accept these people. Then the big thing that most of you do when somebody is annoying and obnoxious and difficult is you insist, and you may be right, that they're treating you unfairly and that the unfairness shouldn't exist. So you prove to yourself about unfairness that it probably does exist, don't exaggerate it, but it should be that way. People should be unfair when they're unfair, because how the hell else can they be when they're unfair? They have to be unfair right now, not forever. And that it's only inconvenient unfairness. Now, occasionally, if they're lopping your head off with a meat axe, that's very inconvenient. But normally they don't do that. The things that they do obnoxiously are quite inconvenient, but they're not horrible, awful, and terrible, even though they're unfair. If you follow REG, you can use our psychoeducational techniques cognitively. We have tons of pamphlets and books and cassettes and audiovisual stuff to go over many times, especially my book on anger, Anger, How to Live With and Without It. But there are lots of other materials that we have, my books and the other people's books here in the pamphlets. And you can come to our workshops, our talks, such as this one, to really see educationally what you're doing to yourself and how you cannot do that. And one of the techniques we use in regular RET with our clients, we encourage them to teach RET to their poor, unsuspecting friends and relatives. It may help the relatives and friends, but it almost always helps them. So you can try to teach them RET. What they're doing, A, something goes wrong in their life, B, they tell themselves this shouldn't exist, isn't that awful, I can't stand it, and then C, they act obnoxiously. But you could help them see that if you're non-damning of them and use RET with them, and then you teach it to yourself. And then you could use humor. We're now getting to the emotive techniques, because I just gave you some of the cognitive techniques, the thinking techniques, but we have a whole variety of emotive, forceful, vigorous techniques, because you, alas, hold your nonsense very powerfully and vigorously much of the time. And you definitely can give that up if you would tackle it in a very powerful, vigorous manner. And one of the ways is humor. For example, that you are obsessed with these difficult customers and you think of them all the time. The people you hate, you spend all your time and energy thinking of them. To see how funny that is, you may stop it. And very often you're making a real mountain out of a molehill, and you're Jehovahistic because you're commanding, I am the Lord thy God, and you shit shouldn't be as shitty as you indubitably are. And of course, you don't run them. Maybe alas, but you don't. You're having a temper tantrum. You can see yourself having a two-year-old temper tantrum. And ironically, you're victimizing yourself by your anger. But some of our other emotive techniques that you can use, because you better be forceful, are understanding and what I recently called thunderstanding. You better understand what you're doing and what they're doing and other people are doing in a very thunderous manner to sink it in. And you can use rational emotive imagery where you imagine the worst, them at their worst, and that's not hard to do, you can easily do that. Let yourself feel very upset, very enraged, very murderous toward them, and then work on your feelings, which you can do by changing them into appropriate feelings of sorrow and disappointment and regret and frustration. You have to do it many times until you train yourself whenever you think of them, even before they've done something off or after they've done it, to make yourself trained to feel appropriately instead of inappropriately angry. And then you can take those coping statements I said before and really powerfully drill them into yourself. You go over many times, you write them down, you go over, I don't need these people to act well, though I wish to hell they would. And I can stand their rotten behavior. So they're unfair. Isn't that fascinating that humans are as unfair as they are? They're talented at their unfair. Too damn fair. And you can have forceful self-dialogues with yourself by putting on a tape recorder, a little tape recorder, for 2, 3, 4 minutes, your nutty ideas. They shouldn't be the way they especially are. And then fight it right on the tape. Dispute it actively and get answers to it. And then listen to it later and have your friends and maybe them listen to it to see how forcefully you gave up the notion, not just what the content was. And among other things, you could work on, as I'll say a little later, fully accepting yourself with your failings, and then that helps you accept them with them, to give them what we call unconditional acceptance. You don't ever accept or like, you accept the fact that you don't like what they do, but you teach yourself, train yourself over and over to accept them as against humans, as fallible humans who are okay just because they're alive and kicking, but not because of their kicks that they do, especially towards you. You just unconditionally accept people, persons, but not their behavior. And you can do reverse role playing. You can get one friend of yours to hold your nutty ideas. They're no damn good and they shouldn't be that way. And hold rigorously to it while you have to talk him or her out of it. And you can use stories and fables, etc. The one story that I tell, which is supposed to be true, was the great philosopher Epictetus, who was a slave, a Roman slave, working in the fields with a big ball and chain on his leg, slave of the Romans. He was really Greek himself. And his master came up to him and started tightening the chains on his leg, and he said, "Look, master, if you keep tightening those, you'll break my leg." And the master kept tightening and broke his leg, and he was lame for the rest of his life. But whereupon Epictetus, for one of the first times in human history, without anger, said, "See, I told you, you broke my leg." And the master was so impressed by this that he later freed him, and he became head of the Stoic school of philosophy in Rome. So you can use fables, stories, poems, etc. Now, behaviorally, if you want to get rid of your anger toward these DCs, difficult customers, one, you can assert yourself often and tell them that, "Oh, I don't like what you're doing, that you're a bastard for doing it." So you usually use the I statement. "I feel uncomfortable when you act in that obnoxious manner." And the quicker and better you assert yourself, we hope a little diplomatically, then the less likely you are to enrage yourself. Most people enrage themselves because they refuse for quite a while to assert themselves. So you better assert yourself before the rage or you build it up. Behaviorally, you can deliberately stay, especially with a boss or a mate or somebody who's acting badly in a rotten situation, work on you, your anger, your low frustration tolerance, which will come to in a couple of minutes, and then, and only then, really think of leaving. But don't leave in a huff with the anger, because you'll take it to the next difficult customer who you can't guarantee that you will find, but you will find those people. And you can give yourself reinforcements, rewards, when you do your cognitive, emotive, and behavioral homework, and penalties of different kinds when you don't do them. Also, a behavioral technique has been called time out. When you're fighting with a difficult customer and you see you're both getting nowhere and they're probably getting more difficult, then you can agree with them that every time one of you gives a signal, you part for 20 minutes or an hour or something like that, think things over, and then come back and maybe fight again, but maybe not. And of course, one of the best behavioral techniques is once you calm yourself down, then, and then only, you can usually compromise, find middle ground solutions and things along that line. So those are some of the main things you can do about your rage, your anger, your fury, which almost always exacerbates your problem. But alas, the other aspect which coalesces at times, but is somewhat different than rage, is low frustration tolerance. With anger at yourself, you're saying, "I must do well," or "I know what kind of a shit I am." And with anger at others, you're saying they must not be obnoxious or they're indubitably no damn good. But the third thing is conditions that under which I exist must be exactly the way I want them. And therefore, it's too hard, it's annoying to be with these people, and I can't stand the conditions, the office or the home or the other conditions under which we live. and low frustration tolerance has the nutty negative philosophy, not that it's hard or they're acting badly, but it's too hard. It never, never, never should be, or must not be that hard, that I, noble person that I am, deserve better than this, and I can't bear it, I can't tolerate it when it's this hard, and I need only immediate gratification, not this crap that they're handing me. And then again, that it should be easy to change these unchangeable sons of bitches. So with those philosophies, you're really going to rant and rave internally and often to them.